It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Located in LaGrange, Illinois, Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as always,
Steven
is my co-host,
Brown.
And we have Dave Gonzalez back in the studio.
Give it up for Dave.
He brought his ultra sexy voice again.
He did. It goes with him wherever he goes.
We've had no women on the podcast, so we have to have like one sexy guy, I feel.
Just so I think of the two women listeners we have continue to listen.
Guys, it is not me.
Just for Dave.
Oh, it is you, though.
I got vouchers for that.
You can't turn it off. You got like a Venus flytrap thing going on.
Damn. It's early in the morning. You know, they're just hearing all that. They're hearing all last night here.
It's
you know,
one in the afternoon.
All right.
It is. It's the afternoon now, Dave.
Rockstar status.
Well, today we are talking that history has been made. A thing we never thought would happen has happened, is completed, and has worked, which is... someone has taken The Dark Knight Returns animated it page by page.
Almost panel for
panel. Panel for panel.
I'm at church right now. Preach.
Put it out as two movies. They were both great.
Awesome. Yeah. It looked great. It was a good mix between Miller's style and the Bruce Timm style. Like, these things were awesome. Like, and I heard a little complaints from some of the guys at the shop that the voices weren't up to snuff.
Really?
Well, yeah, a lot of people aren't really big. If you don't use like Mark Hamill for the Joker,
come on.
People don't really like that.
But I kind of like that about the line of films that they've done, because this is, I don't know, what is this, number 12 or something?
It's up there.
Yeah,
it's up there.
They've done a lot of these
the direct
movies.
And I agree with the fact that if you're going to change the character design of Batman, then you can change the voice.
Yeah.
Because if it was the Bruce Timm animated series Batman, if he looked exactly the same in Dark Knight and Year One and Under the Red Hood and Gotham Knight, then I would want it to be Kevin Conroy.
Yeah. But I think, I don't know, I like the differentiating voices, and I think it'd get kind of stale if you keep using the same guys over. And no question, Mark Hamill's always going to be my go-to Joker. When I think of the voice, that's the voice I hear, but it's like... that creepy guy from Lost they used for the
Joker? Michael Emerson.
He's scary, dude.
It was like this weird...
it was dry.
Dry.
It was real dry and laid back.
It was creepy.
But I thought that really fit the book, because in that book, you know, he wears a white suit. He almost never smiles.
He's
never
like comatose for half the book. He's in a coma.
And that's
what
the voices do for me. Like, you know, what happens is that, like, Mark Hamill and, you know, Kevin Conroy, that's Batman in his prime.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's not Batman when he's seen it all. You know, like, now RoboCop comes
in and
is like,
RoboCop, Batman, yeah. That's
like,
what everyone's
seen
saying.
It all. You know, he's like, I don't have to scream as loud as I used
and that's
to.
And that's why you get Peter Weller
exactly.
to be him in Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
And you also have the connection because Frank Miller wrote RoboCop 2.
Yeah.
And there are some Dark Knight Return sequences in RoboCop 2. Like, RoboCop punches through a wall and grabs a guy who's holding someone hostage.
Brings it out.
There's that. I will say about Peter Weller, as Batman, the one problem I have is when he yells.
Yeah, he gives that speech on the horse, and it's kind of like...
and it's like when he goes up, his voice kind of gets high and thinner, and he's like, I am the law,
he sounds
and
like,
you're all going to get buckets and put out the fire.
Yeah.
That's the only problem.
It was
but not
goofy.
With these.
Yes. I am the law.
Yeah, it's a little goofy.
It's almost Ray Romano at that point.
Yeah, it's for some reason, it seemed like...
stop, mutants! I'm the law! Deborah!
It always feels like every time I've seen that, it seems like it's like, this is old Adam West Batman again. Like, that's what it seems like. Really, like, this is what happens when Adam West gets old. You know, it's that version of Batman on a horse trying to rally the troops, and it's like...
that's like Batman on antidepressants. Like, he's just like, I'm the law.
But you know what I think the problem is you can't get a gravelly guy to yell. Because if you have a really gravelly voice, that's your weakness. Because you guys have seen Unforgiven? The Clint Eastwood?
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite movies. But there's that scene where he's trying to get the kid to stop shooting at them. Where, like, the kid who's following him is up in the ridge and he's snipering.
Yeah.
And, like, Clint Eastwood has to yell to get him to stop. And his voice just gives out and he goes, hey, kid, stop shooting at us.
It's not
like,
going to work.
And every time I see that, I'm like, that kid can't hear you.
No.
It's not
going to
work.
So I think just physically, if you have a voice that sounds like that, you're not going to be able to project it.
Yeah, no. You don't get a lot of variety.
But other than that, I liked the Peter Weller that wasn't like real gruff and grumbly. He wasn't the Thing, which kind of I always heard reading the book.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, you get like the big, like he's, you know, gargling
rocks. Yeah, he's
rocks.
Just like he's low and cool and it just shifts into gravel when it needs to.
Yeah. Yeah, so overall, I think, like, I don't know, the voice is a little nitpicky with me, the way people were rapping on it. But other than that, everyone else, like, we had it on at the store, and everyone who came in was like, oh, is this, what is this, what is this? And you tell them what it is. Oh, I can't believe they did, and it's two parts, and then you're like, Best Buy, go get it, or whatever. And it's like, it is just, it even, I mean, the thing just looks, awesome. Looks awesome. You know exactly what it is when you walk
in. Can't go wrong with it. I mean, it's so, like, iconic that the moment you see it, you're like, I don't know if it's Bruce Timm, I don't know, like, what kind of art is going, but you can see Dark Knight Returns when you see it. Like, he's a big, burly man, like, Batman is going at it. It's eye-grabbing. I love it. Oh, my God.
Now, and that leads me to my question We were talking with Joe Pakovitz when we were talking about the history of comics. Obviously, we had to talk about Dark Knight Returns. You can't not.
Yeah.
And I think in that podcast, we really discussed how important it was to the history of comics. But it's 25 years later. Everybody's kind of done that. Like, why is it still great? Because there's some things like, say, the first Die Hard it's been copied so much that it's not quite as good as you remember. You kind of watch. You have to remind yourself, oh, nobody did this before.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's what I think. The biggest thing is, like, oh, people read, like, that first Fantastic Four, and they'll be like, well, this book sucks. Who cares about this? It's like, well, no, you got to understand. Look at what Marvel Comics were before that, and look at what DC was putting out during the time. It's like, it really is leaps and bounds ahead of its time. And I think the same thing with, like, Dark Knight. You read it, and it's like, it's good, but it's like, well, what's the big deal? I've read 1,000 Batman's like this in every book. And it's like, well, at the time, he wasn't like this. There was no Batman book like this. Comics weren't even like this at the time.
I will say, I'll counter that, but I think that book is still really different. And that every time I read it, and now when I watch the movie, the one thing that impressed me was the movie really got the impact of the book.
Yeah.
Like, that book is brutal.
It's rough.
You know, I don't think Batman's ever been that brutal to anybody. And there was a shift because I got back into DC with Dark Knight Returns. And I picked up the monthlies thinking it was going to be that. And I realized, okay, it's kind of like going from a movie to a TV show. We're going to back it off a bit.
It was standalone. It was so good that it protruded like way out from what everything else was coming out at the time. It did one thing that I thought was amazing. It made good guys fight good guys. And at the time, that wasn't thought of. Like, so when Batman went at Superman, but not in like this...
A mind control.
Yeah, like, this is him beating the tar out of him.
Yeah, like not really in like this Stan Lee.
He does. He kicks the shit out of him.
He does, but like not in like this Stan Lee kind of like, well, who will win this war? They'll all win. You know, like, no.
Or it's like the misunderstanding fight, and then they team up and fight the bad guy. This is like, no, Superman, I'm gonna turn you into street.
Exactly. We're on opposite ends of this issue, and we're gonna fight about it.
Yeah, which is awesome because, like I said, that's like you said. Under the mind control or some other goofy thing that hadn't really been done up until then.
And that's one of the brilliant parts of that book was, you know, it escalates each book of the four books has a central villain and they escalate as they go up. First one is Two-Face.
Yeah.
Second one is the mutants, which is a new creation.
Yep.
So it's like, here's Batman taking out one of his standard rogues gallery guys. Here's him taking back out new guys that we created just for this. Then the third one's the Joker. Mm-hmm. And every time I get to that part, I'm like, how did, isn't it done now? Because he beat the Joker.
Be over. Yeah.
And it's really the brilliance of Miller's like, no, when you're done with the Joker, now you have to fight Superman.
Right.
Yeah.
It'd be an awesome video game.
That's one of the things I like about the DC Universe, like, which I think even the Marvel Universe doesn't do as much, was there's always a level, like, if you raise any character high enough, they're open to the rest of the DC Universe. Like, they don't live in their separate silos as often. And even Marvel, which all created by the same guy, not as many books, not as many characters, all living in New York, a Spider-Man story is usually a Spider-Man story.
Yeah, very rarely. And it wasn't until, like, I mean, but by the time, I mean, the heroes pretty much all fight, but very rarely other than, like, Doctor Doom do the villains kind of go anywhere else. It's not until the 80s, Spider-Man fights, like, a guy like Juggernaut, and it's like, well, wait, that's an X-Men villain. Juggernaut doesn't really, the hell does he care?
That's fight, too.
It's awesome. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is it took him, 40 years almost for them to get to that?
Yeah, and ironically, DC's the one that was completely siloed because before the Justice Society and the Golden Age and then the Justice League and the Silver Age, they were all really self-contained.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't see them pop up. Like, Superman, they had World's Finest if you wanted to team up guys in Justice League, but Superman never showed up in an issue of Detective in the 60s and 70s. And now, like, part of the 80s, and maybe Miller's a big part of that, is like once you do something big enough in your own book, the rest of the DC universe is going to start
to like jump on.
And that's what they did.
And that's why it always makes sense for things like Blackest Night, which was basically a long gestating Green Lantern story that became a DC universe
story. Everybody else in.
People that were into Green Lantern love that story, and people that were not into Green Lantern do not like it.
Yeah, because it's too...
Because it's
too
a Green Lantern story.
Involving all the guys in the books they're reading.
Yeah.
But getting to Frank Miller, I think something, you know, it's... Like you said, it's such a powerful, like, his version of Batman, what he did to Batman. It's like, and then 20 years later, he tries to do it again with that All-Star book, and it's like...
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, it's like all the shock and flash without any of the substance. You know, it's like, there's a lot of motivation behind Batman in Dark Knight. There's a lot of, you can get behind that character. And you read All-Star Batman, it's like, he's just a lunatic in a bat costume punching people in the face.
And that's like, what it was. I mean, Dark Knight... What we're talking about is that book right there. The violence was a, you know, justifies the means kind of thing, where the story really had too much substance to a point where, like, you wanted to see how brutal Batman could get when he was pushed to the limits at his older age. And that really stood out. And that's what we connected on. It's like, wow, this is a human. This is the first time I felt Batman was humanized.
Right. Well, he's constantly talking about how his body aches and how he's moving slower than he was and how he would have taken this guy out earlier. Right. He's constantly acknowledging his limitations. Not only is he drawn bigger and beefier.
Yeah. And that's something important, too, because you know, I think people forget Batman's supposed to just be like a regular guy, but he's a regular guy in his prime, a thing most guys are never going to experience what it's like to be at that level of like athletic ability.
Right.
And then, but everyone can relate to, oh, I'm really sore from, you know, working out at the gym or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like the next day.
That's what he's doing.
And that's what he brings to it, is like, what would it be like?
Yeah, it's the internal dialogue of an athlete, is what I'm saying.
20 years of just getting your body abused by crime.
And just age, because when you start to get into your 40s and your 50s, things don't work the same.
Yeah.
And it's the first time that you actually hear Batman walk us through his thought process while fighting. I have to take this out first. I have to do this first in order to win this fight right now. And it was never
thought
of that way.
My favorite line in that is when he's facing off the guy, and I'm going to get the numbers wrong, so somebody's going to yell at me, but he's like, there's 10 ways to disarm this guy. 6 of them kill. He's like 3 cripple. This one hurts. And he just kicks the guy.
Kicks him.
And you see this huge crack sound effect.
And he chooses it. Yeah. And that's what made it all human. Now with the All-Star, go straight to All-Star. It's like almost someone told you all those scenes that were awesome, like relive those. And when you just try and do dope scenes with no substance behind them, it turns into All-Star.
It was all.
You know, it just turns into that.
Well, the saddest thing about All-Star for me is that Frank Miller follows up Dark Knight Returns with Year One, which is arguably better than Dark Knight
Year
Returns.
Year One, I think, is my standalone favorite Batman story.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's Year better drawn. Mazzucchelli, like, I think, is...
Yeah.
And he was at the top of his game with that book.
The other thing is all the weird, goofy satire and political leanings of Dark Knight Returns, which eventually, like, consume Frank Miller in things like Holy Terror, that's not in Year One. Year One is stripped down, simple story of... This is how Bruce Wayne becomes Batman, and it's so good that no one has ever gone into it to alter it. You know, Nolan uses a lot of it in Batman Begins and doesn't change much.
And no one really ever made an effort to go and re-examine what the closest to the origin of Batman would be. And we still haven't seen, like, the traveling the world origin. No one's ever really done that.
Except for Batman Begins.
That's the closest we've gotten
And we've seen, like, a lot of flashes. There would be a story where it's like, oh, the backstory here is when Bruce is studying with this one guy.
Yeah.
And it's usually, oh, he's met him older and now he has to fight him.
Yeah. But I think, you know, that first, you know, the first time he runs around as Batman and almost gets killed, you know, no one ever tries to touch that because it's like, oh, well, they did that. It's Batman Year One and it's better than art and the writing's going to be better than anything, you know, they could put together now.
You know, the crazy part is that they're both great stories. I just had the sense when I read Year One that I wanted more. Like, it intrigued me, that relationship that was building. I just wanted more. It didn't feel finished.
Yeah, well, you're getting like 4 issues, and it's like, that would have been awesome as a full expanded.
Yeah.
But 4 issues to do 1 year and 4 issues is a lot. And that's something, you know, American comics do is everything's super condensed. Japan comics or Japanese comics, everything is, it breathes everywhere. And that would have been 30 issues.
And I like that it's open-ended, because I always felt that, okay, it's the beginning of Batman. If you want to read more Batman, Just read Batman.
Grab a monthly comic.
Yeah, it's very true.
Read anything. Because Frank, I love the fact that Frank Miller didn't do the middle period of Batman. He's like, I'm doing the beginning, I'm doing the end.
Yeah.
Everybody else is going to do the middle for the next 100 years.
It's almost like catch up to me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've already predicted where the story's going.
He did the Alpha, he did the Omega, you know, everyone else is going to
follow. Now, guys, fill in the gaps for me and see what you
come
up with.
And the other thing, too, is I'd rather have them do 4 solid issues of year one than have them do 6 and the last 2 suck. Or there's a weak one in the middle.
Yeah.
Year one is like...
a fill-in artist.
Exactly. It's a perfect book. You don't have to mess with it. There's nothing I'd change in it. And it's just like... had it been 6 issues, 8 issues, 10 issues, 12 issues, maybe there's
maybe.
6, yeah, 8, 10 issues that suck.
Maybe.
You know? Hold up.
You know?
Yeah. So what happens to Frank Miller then? Because you have, I mean, we mentioned All-Star a few times. Obviously disappointing. The Jim Lee art is still pretty good, at least. But what we're not mentioning is Dark Knight Strikes Again.
All right, so here, let's get a little timeline here.
You can't eye roll on a podcast, Dave.
Let's animate that eye roll. Let's just do something.
Your eye rolls sound like Venetian blinds. You need more drops in your eyes.
All right. Oh my God.
I thought that was his lashes, you know?
I can't believe you even brought that
sexy,
up. I would read All-Star Batman over... The second time he goes into the Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, I'd read All-Star Batman only because it's like, it's such a train wreck.
At least I got something to look at, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, at least I got something to look
but
at.
But I think, all right, so...
And I'll agree with you because I own the hardcover of All-Star Batman, which admittedly I got at half-price books. I do not own Dark Knight Strikes Again. I had the issues when they came out. I'm sure I sold them on eBay because I no longer have them.
I think I have a copy, but it's just in case I run out of toilet paper. Like, you go to them, like, what? I bought it knowing that, like, oh, this is going to be Frank Miller's, like, oh.
Right. It was a big deal
when it came out.
Yeah, at my time, too, because I remember, like, and not to get off track, but like, I wanted to live through a Lakers versus Celtics finals, right?
Mm-hmm.
I lived through it. I was like, this is my Dark Knight Returns that I remember as an adult.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I bought it as. Like, as an adult, this is mine. Like, I'm going to tell my kids I was here, and I bought it, and I looked at it, and I read it, and I wish I never lived through that.
I spent all 3 issues going, maybe it's going to get better.
Yes, it'll end really
maybe
good.
With time. Maybe with time.
We're not going to figure this out on our own, so I gave a call to Mike Drucker. Mike and I created the Play Call audio commentaries a few years ago, and we did a lot of short films together, which you can still see on YouTube under the Play Call channel. Since then, he's become an accomplished stand-up comedian and a great writer. He's written for The Onion, McSweeney's, and IGN, and now he's writing for Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. He is way smarter than me, so he's got to have a better understanding about Frank Miller.
Oh, and he also directed, let's not forget that he directed The Spirit.
Didn't we watch that together?
I think we tried to watch it together and turned it off.
I remember I watched it in the apartment when you lived a block away, and I can't remember if you made it all the way through.
No, we put it on, and I think like even 10 or 15 minutes in, I was like, I just can't do this.
I think you may have left the building. You may have left the lunch half eaten.
Well, because my thing with movies is like usually most of the time when someone's like, this movie's awful or terrible, I can usually make it through because I'm not that picky. Like,
right.
I like the movie Mystery Men, and I know nobody else does.
Oh, no, I do not like the movie. I went to the premiere of that, and I don't like it.
Like I can usually, in almost every movie, I can find the silver lining and be like, you know what? This is okay. But The Spirit, like, it just didn't make sense. It was put together weird. It didn't feel like the original comic at all.
Well, the thing about The Spirit that really threw me was... it proved to me that Frank Miller's not a film director because you could see how it was storyboarded.
Yeah.
And every shot looked great. And then the people would start moving and talking and ruin everything that he had set up.
Yeah.
It almost would have worked better as like a Vanity Fair photo essay.
Yeah, but I mean, Frank Miller and Vanity Fair photo essay probably would never go together.
I would totally buy that, though.
Because he'd like call them like socialists or something.
That would make me want to buy it more. It's kind of like when Kurt Cobain wore the like corporate magazine Still Suck t-shirt on the cover of Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
People wanted to read that article.
That's the other weird thing about Frank Miller, though, is like you feel like when you read, you know, Dark Knight Returns, there's like a lot like making fun of Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's I think a lot about 1980s conservatism that he's like sort of making fun of or at least like poking holes in. And then, like, the later comics are just, like, racist and super nationalistic. Like, it's almost like this huge political switch.
Well, I don't think, I'm starting to wonder if it was a political switch or if all that stuff in Dark Knight Returns is not satire.
That's and it's possible, yeah.
There might be no jokes in there at all. He might have really been like, Reagan should be president when he's 90.
And I do remember, like, even as a kid, I remember reading, like, the early Sin Cities, and maybe this was in Dark Knight Returns, but, like, a lot of the Nazi symbolism where I'm like, this seems weird.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like Osama bin Laden slept with Frank Miller's girlfriend. Like, it feels like, terrorism's bad, and the attacks were very bad, and we're all very bad, you know, affected by them, and knew people who were affected by them, but, like, Frank Miller, like, it goes from being, like, this is bad and we need to stop it to being like, hey, these guys are pieces of go-. It's weirdly personal in a way that makes very little sense.
Yeah, it's got to get off my lawn feel to it.
Right, exactly.
I wonder if 9/11 hit Frank Miller the same way it hit Dennis Miller.
I think it did.
Oh, maybe it was the Miller family.
If they were related, it would make a lot of things
make
a lot of sense.
So much sense.
This very whiny, complainy form of nationalism.
Yeah, going from liberal to completely conservative and not listening to anyone else.
And thinking like everyone else is just being like lied to and tricked.
Yeah. Now, one of the things we're talking about is where do you think Frank Miller starts that turn?
Almost like Todd McFarlane with the 90s. You know, Frank Miller with the 80s like captured the feeling of that decade. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, you know, like, if you read later Todd McFarlane stuff, you're like, who gives a shit? This is terrible.
Yeah, like Spawn number 110.
Right. Because you're not in that, you don't have that feeling of that decade anymore. You know what I mean? Like, certain people transcend time, and certain people are very of their time period.
Huh.
And I feel like Frank Miller is very of the 80s, but, like, once he got out of the 80s, he kept being like, remember the 80s? And people are like, no, you need to move forward. And he's like, I'm going to become even more like me.
So you're saying Frank Miller's the reason Max Headroom didn't get renewed?
Yeah, exactly. But then I think 9/11 happened, and like you can sort of see it in Dark Knight Strikes Back again, Strikes Again. Like there's a point in the middle of it that I think like when he was making it, 9/11 happened, that you can see it sort of take this huge turn. Is it him or is it someone else that's super homophobic?
What do you mean? You mean you as a reader?
No, I mean, is Frank Miller homophobic or is...
I don't know. There's a weird sexual current to his stuff. There's like, right. There's a rapey feeling to his stuff.
There's a very rapey feeling to his
stuff. Yeah, because there's the mutants, you know, especially that scene with the mutants and Robin in the alley. It's very rapey and like Daredevil's always like, it's always around the corner from somebody getting raped.
It's very... It's, you know what, it has a very nationalistic feel to it that, like, everyone is trash that wants to kill and rape and murder, except for, like, these few strong white men on a hill.
Yeah, except for the one guy who wants to beat everybody up.
Right.
And that's why I'm wondering is, I need to read his Daredevil run again, because you know kind of, like, how much worse Batman Forever gets after you've seen Batman and Robin?
Yeah.
Because you see all the seeds in it.
Yeah,
I'm wondering if Daredevil holds up as well, or if you start to see like weird fascistic, like rapey
probably
feeling in it. I just remember there were a lot of guys getting thrown through plate glass windows.
Right, it's a very weird archetype he has. Like he loves Nazi women and fat white men.
Yeah,
it just makes noise. And you know, and I think like his art style was good in like in Ronin, right? Ronin was that one book, like where it's like. Again, that very 80s cyberpunky feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
That I think he pulls off well because it has those crazy elements where you're like, what's that, what's that, what's that, what's that? But I also feel like the success of 300 spoiled him in a way where he's like, I was right!
Oh, yeah, 300.
Which is also very racist and nationalistic.
Yeah, totally. Well, it barely has a story. The book itself is the book itself is weird. And I would say the movie is completely the opposite of homophobic.
Yeah.
Movie's basically homoerotic.
Yeah.
Where every guy's oiled and shaded. I'm convinced that they all have CG abs in that movie.
It wouldn't surprise me, or if they at least have like very heavy makeup touch up on their abs.
Yeah, like that now
in Twilight didn't they have those?
No, but Mariah Carey. Mariah Carey on the 4th of July.
You went with Mariah Carey and I went with Twilight.
I'm older than you. It's like my favorite thing about Halloween is the fat kid in the Batman muscle suit.
I've been that kid before.
I know.
I've been that kid where it's like not fooling anybody.
The six pack comes way out.
It's barrel shaped. I don't look like Batman. I look like the guy that Joker tortured in the Dark Knight movie.
Anything that's going on? I know you have 8 billion followers on Twitter.
Yeah, if any of you guys want to follow me, it's at Mike Drucker, just one word. I talk about depression a lot.
That's true. And you get written up in Batgirl for it.
I get written up in Batgirl for it. I got a villain in Batgirl. Because when Gail had told Gail, like, a year ago, was like, hey, do you want to be a villain in a Batgirl comic? And I was like, yeah, yes. And then she's like, hey, you're a villain, but... I hope it's not weird, but you're a black guy with a white afro. And I was like, that's much better than anything else could have been.
You know what? The white afro does look like you.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
I saw that. He was limber, though.
He's Bleak Michael.
Yeah. What would you do if the DC Direct figure came out of that?
I would buy a bunch, and because they would, I mean, they'll never make it. It would be the Mexico Comic-Con exclusive or something.
I imagine you buying 5 of them and having all of them avoiding eye contact.
Yeah. They're all like, one's looking at the wall.
Yeah. One's looking at his shoes.
One's just always in bed.
When you were in the room or making music, writing, drawing, whatever it is, it was 12 hours a day. When somebody starts giving you like accolades for that stuff, it turns into 10 hours, then 4 hours, then 2 hours,
well,
then 1 hour.
That's a good example of Todd McFarlane.
Oh, yeah.
With all these weird quotes where they're like, you know, he's a millionaire and he's like 20 writing comic or drawing comics. Yep. And then he's like, well, fuck, do you care if I turn in, you know, 20 blank pages and it sells 3 million copies?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, because my name's on it.
And that was the problem with most of the Image guys. And although McFarlane became a businessman.
Yeah.
And that's what he's running. And, you know, you can say how well McFarlane is doing now. I mean, the Walking Dead figures are not great. He's been doing just sports for a long time.
Yeah.
What does Spawn sell at the store now?
We get like 2 copies for subscribers.
Yeah, Spawn used to beat X-Men
when
he was drawing it. And even when he left, he put Capullo on it.
When Capullo was drawing it?
Yeah, and Capullo
and
was great.
Todd McFarlane was putting his name on it?
Todd McFarlane was inking over Capullo for a while.
To make it look like McFarlane.
He was always writing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's still writing it, but now they're doing like these.
Does that
weird
writing get quotation
covers
marks on it?
Yes.
Okay. I just
you put your air quotes on.
Okay. I put air quotes on a podcast. Thank you.
So, yeah, and I loved Spawn till like issue 30. Because I was a huge McFarlane fan from Spider-Man. That kept me in Marvel. I'd quit all of Marvel in the late 80s, like especially X-Men. Like when I dumped X-Men, I felt like I'm pretty much done with comics.
Yeah.
And that's also when I discovered Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen, Geffen and Demandis' Justice
DC
League.
I pulled over to DC, but I kept buying
Spider-Man because of McFarlane. So then when he went over to Spawn, I was like, oh, I'll read an indie title, which I had never even done.
Yeah.
I had always been Marvel and DC.
Okay.
And I was really into Spawn for a while, but yeah, the rot, you know, if you want to say the rot sets in. With McFarlane, it's very clear that he became really interested in starting a toy company.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, arguably the toy company was bigger than the book. The book was huge. The book sold a million copies.
That's crazy.
But the toy company was like up there with, you know, Toy Biz and Hasbro and Kenner. And Mattel for years.
Yeah. I remember that time.
That's going to make him more money than the comic.
Yeah, and then the other Image guys, I mean, you guys like Jim Lee that come back to DC and make their living there, and then you have Rob Liefeld who draws a bunch of books for DC and drops out.
Yeah.
There's no way that you're giving any of those. You know, you're a slave to too many masters. There's no way you're giving any of those the props that they deserve.
Yeah, you got to do like one or the other.
So you're going to have 4-page writing. You're going to like, go with it. Just go with it. Right. And that's how All-Star...
And you're seeing that with somebody like Jeff Johns. I think once... I loved Jeff Johns, and once they promoted him to
Same
CCO
thing.
Of DC Comics, moved him out to LA, had him like involved in the Green Lantern movie and the animated series... The book suffered really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and read, his Hawkman's awesome, his JSA's awesome, his Flash is awesome, his Avengers run was awesome.
His Green Lantern is arguably the best run of that character
ever.
Ever.
I would say Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill on the Green Lantern, Green Arrow stuff was probably better.
I almost consider that a different book because it's Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
It's a team-up. It's a different dynamic.
It's almost like comparing World's Finest to
Superman,
although it was the same book. They just basically added Green Arrow.
Yeah,
but... But he was the first one to like really explore the mythology, tie it all together.
Yeah.
And that was my favorite book from Rebirth until Blackest Night. And then he's just started getting busy.
Yeah,
and
I think the guy's just spread too thin. He's,
yeah.
And you know, it's like Aquaman's doing good, but like, all right.
Is
Aquaman,
he still writing that or did he hand
yeah,
it
out? He's okay. doing Aquaman. So like Aquaman is cool. really good every month, but then Justice League is kind of like it's nothing's really over. Happening. And now right. Justice League is good because it's in a crossover with Aquaman, that Throne of Atlantis thing.
No.
So it's like, all right, that's so both of them. But you got to read both. And it's like, yeah, they're both pretty much an Aquaman book at this point. You know,
I did like the first Justice League story arc, but it's a guilty pleasure.
It's like nothing just, happens.
No, they all fight Darkseid. That's what happens.
Yeah, kind of.
That's all you need to do.
That's what. No, well, they fight a lot of parademons, and Darkseid stands in the middle. It's like a video game.
You
drawn.
You know, you can't really.
They have a boss battle for some reason. Darkseid is 15 feet tall.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the industry is based on like getting a lot of talented people that are talented at their craft, like at their craft, like they know what they're doing. And then you take them and you put them in places where they're not as comfortable because you want them to just touch it. Because
everybody gets bored.
Dude, but come on, man. If you're dope at something, stay dope at that.
Yeah, but I think like if you're, say like you're really good at something uh-huh. and you have no interest in doing that thing you're really good at, uh-huh. what's your yeah. motivation to keep doing that? You
That's
know what I mean?
True.
It's like I am at the end of the day, all I'm ever interested in is entertaining myself. And the second entertaining y'all isn't entertaining to me, I'm going to stop doing that. It's and very, I think that's like Frank Miller and all these other guys.
That's kind of what this is for you, isn't it?
This is entertaining, but the
you're
day
entertaining.
This,
you've got your own voice in your all, headphones. Hey, you're entertaining
myself.
Yourself.
You know, I'm a very self-obsessed, like I'm very vain, you know, vain person.
I've caught Steven in here with no podcast going on with the headphones on.
I just sit here with
himself,
the headphones. Yeah, talk.
It's and weird. It's in my house, which is the oddest part.
Well, you're in my store a lot, so you know.
But who's paying the rent?
I will give you one baby
all the other
for this comic book shop.
Wait, let's just call it Hammurabi's Comics.
There you go.
We will split the baby down the middle
right
and
the
give
middle.
You a variant for this half.
So back to Frank Miller.
Yes.
He is Miller. So crazy with all his Batman stuff that when DC came out and said there are 52, because DC has got a big rubbery one for the number 52. There are 52 universes.
Okay.
Frank right. Miller, all his Batman stories, he has his own universe. Every Frank Miller story, that's all the same Batman. So
see,
All-Star
I believe that's
Batman,
true, though.
Like, if you read
Frank
it,
Miller right. is in his own
read,
universe.
Because think about it. Read year one, uh-huh. and it's Batman starting out, and he's got a pretty... It's a good book, so he's got a pretty level head.
Yeah.
Then chronologically next would be
All-Star.
And it's Batman starting to lose it and has like a lot of problems.
Okay.
Then you read Dark okay, Knight I'm Returns. Here. So Batman looking back, being I had some crazy younger days, and he's kind of getting himself together again. Gets on, puts on the bat suit, runs around out, beats up Superman, then goes crazy, and Dark Knight Strikes Again happens.
I got a question.
And Batman lost it
so
again.
Are you saying that he intentionally wrote All-Star Batman?
No.
Terribly?
This is me making
make
sense of it.
Body?
This is me putting it all into like okay. one
I,
little box.
I think what you're describing is Frank Miller slowly going crazy.
Absolutely. But I'm putting it in the chronology of when the stories would have taken
so
place.
So Batman's okay. autobiographical.
Batman's autobiographical,
now,
and his life is a roller coaster
now,
of going ups and downs of like highs of lucidity and lows of insanity.
Now, where do you put Holy Terror, which was supposed to be a Batman story?
That would come after All-Star.
Okay.
But after. Before
Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight yeah. Returns.
So when Batman goes racist.
And it's Batman who's just like, well, I've, you know, beaten up all the cops in Gotham. He was like shooting them with machine
just
guns.
Just taking them down for some reason.
Kills Green Lantern or whatever he did in the All-Star. And then he goes and fights terrorism. In the Middle East. A book so crazy that DC was like, we're not going to publish this.
Yeah, DC said, sorry, Frank Miller. We
yeah.
don't want another Batman project.
Like, we're going to pass.
And at the time, this was Sin City movie had come out.
Yep.
He was All-Star Batman and Robin was selling
they
awesome.
They were waiting for him to finish it, which he never has.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
why?
That book ends on a cliffhanger
yep.
in 2008.
Yeah.
The last time they put that book out, Dark Knight was in the theater.
You can't, I mean.
And then he went and did Holy Terror.
And.
So he basically just said, not going to finish this. Going
right.
to do something else.
And it was, this was after Hush, so Jim Lee was huge. So this
yep.
was Jim Lee's big return
Jim
to Batman.
Humongous.
And.
Well, do you remember originally it was supposed to be the reteaming of Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee? And
really?
They were going to do it, and it was going to be the origin of Robin. And then they were like, oh, we can get Frank Miller? And then I think around that
mistake.
Time...
mistake.
Yep. And that I think that might have been before Jeff Loeb went back to Marvel. But
I think Jeff Loeb was like writing for TV or something too at this point.
Oh, he was doing that Heroes thing.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. Heroes is that,
and
right?
Before he was on Lost for a little bit, yeah, and then he helped create Heroes. So I think he's kind of out of the picture.
And you're making
anyway.
More money from TV than you are in comics.
Yeah, but it was supposed to be the sequel to Hush, basically the bookend to Hush, the same way Year One and Dark Knight Returns are. Then they found out Frank Miller was available, and they were like, "Wait a minute, Frank Miller and Jim Lee?
That'd be a bigger.
It's going to be huge, and it's just."
Well, and it was also supposed to be because it was All-Star, regardless of what DC was saying, it was their fucking, that was their ultimate comics. Like, it was going to All-Star Superman,
didn't fit in.
Quietly and Morrison, which was awesome. Yeah, then they were going to do All-Star Batman, which is going to be Frank Miller and Jim Lee, which is going to be huge, or supposed to be. And then All-Star Wonder Woman was supposed to be Adam Hughes and Straczynski.
Right, and that never got off the ground.
Hughes, I don't know what he did. He went, and then Straczynski, they were like, well, here, take the monthly Wonder Woman. And then he burned all kinds of bridges at DC, too, I heard, and was like, now he's done. After this Watchmen thing he's doing, this before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan, that's it. He's done at DC.
He's had a long career, too. Wow. You know, he was the head writer on the real Ghostbusters cartoon.
That was a great cartoon.
And he created Babylon 5. So he had this huge TV career before comics.
They brought him into comics. He did a lot of stuff on Spider-Man.
Spider-Man was where
he
they
did Fantastic Four. He did an awesome run on Thor.
I think he took
his name off. Was he the one who was writing? Who was writing Spider-Man that Brand New Day? Was that him? Was he around there?
He was. Yeah, he wrote up until Brand New Day started, and he was involved in the story where Mephisto breaks up the marriage.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so it is him.
And he wanted his name taken off.
Yeah,
it because,
he wrote the issue, and he said.
It was like a meeting.
Yeah, this is what I heard. In a meeting, him and Quesada, he's like, all right, cool. So we're gonna put Spider-Man's secret identity back in the bottle. How are we gonna do that?
Okay.
And Joe Quesada's like, magic. He's like, okay. Well,
that's Spider-Man, the same way you describe an iMac.
Yeah, exactly. This is exactly how I to any technology, not just iMac.
That'll be the meeting with you.
Let's not get crazy.
How are we gonna get Spider-Man's secret identity back? With an iMac.
Magic. With technology. So then Straczynski's like, all right, well, that's fine. Well, Spider-Man Unmasked on national television, presumably a lot of people recorded this.
Okay.
And a lot of people saw this. Where did all the footage go? Magic. It's like, okay, take my name off this book because this is horseshit. And it's just like, and then he did Thor.
The problem with that was it's like 2 years after
what's
Civil
he got against
War,
Magic?
Yeah.
When he stands in front of cameras next to Iron Man, pulls off his mask and says, my name is Peter Parker. I have been Spider-Man since I was 15. So it's not like Batman where it's like, oh, wait, too many people know who Batman is.
Right.
Too many people know who Batman is. We need for Batgirl to forget who he is. We need to reboot that. It's him on TV.
National television
going, hey, everyone, I'm Spider-Man, which even the Fantastic Four haven't done.
Right. So it's, so he's done. And anyway, Straczynski's done in comics. He's done.
Yeah.
Wow.
Allegedly. Who knows?
So maybe that's a bigger question is how did these guys burn out? Because to answer your question, when Dave, you're saying that sometimes guys get moved around too much, they get out of their comfort zone, they can't come back. But then on the other side, there's guys that stay on a book way too long.
Very true.
Way past when they should.
Way past the prime.
It's just like a weird uncle who won't leave the Christmas party.
Look at Chris Claremont on X-Men.
Yeah.
He was there from 75 to 92.
He's got this day, has the longest run on any comic. I don't think anyone's been on any book longer than he was on X-Men.
Well, not a Marvel or DC book,
I
mean, you know, there's Cerebus.
Yeah, there's creator-owned stuff. Yeah. But I think beyond, like, the major Marvel, DC, no one really has. And I think, like I said, it's a lot of this. These guys get
Peter
huge.
Peter David
and then,
comes close on Hulk.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. And see, there's good examples. Peter David is a company man, consistently writing Marvel for 20 years at this point, probably longer, and hasn't burned out. His Hulk was awesome.
No.
His X-Factor's been great.
I heard his Star Trek novels are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like the really only other thing I know that he's doing.
And I think he's doing really well because, you know, he had a stroke like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And we could do a whole podcast on Peter David, but it sounds like he's already getting back up to speed. He's putting out his own tweets again.
Okay, because I've been reading X-Fact, and they always do like previously in, which
is he
awesome.
Writing that or is somebody writing?
No, he's writing it, and then they'll do like two paragraphs. The first paragraph will be this is what happened in X-Fact in the last couple issues that you need to know, and then the second paragraph will be like Peter David being like, my daughter just got into high school or college or something,
and
all you guys out there. Stay away from her. You know, it's like he'll like let you know like what's going on with his family and his kids and stuff, which is cool. And there hasn't been anything. Oh, Peter's doing okay. Peter's recovering because I think the books are done. You know what I mean? So probably the next issue he'll have written.
That's
post stroke.
Yeah, so hopefully he won't even miss a break. But he was great. I love his Hulk run because even more than Chris Claremont, who changed the team lineup like every couple of years, almost to the point of it being the Avengers, he kept reinventing that book. You know, he's like, well, now he's Grey Hulk. No, now he's Smart Hulk.
Yeah.
Well, now Banner's the Hulk, and Hulk is Banner.
Pretty much
and
all the
always
cool,
kept it interesting.
Yeah, all the coolest stuff about Hulk and all the famous things that everyone knows about the Hulk, Peter David, everything. Yeah.
Everything, okay.
You know?
He's the Bob Marley of the Hulk.
He's the Bob Marley of the Hulk.
Amen. No, I mean, what do you do when someone is, like, already jaded and still writing the same book, and they can't see past that book? I mean,
that's an editor's job, man. An editor needs to come in, grab that guy by the scruff of the neck, and get him out of there.
At a certain point, I just wonder, how much of it is boredom? Like, some people, like, look like they live and breathe the medium that they're doing, and they could go on for years doing it without burning out. They just want to do it. They want to entertain themselves, and this is how they've done it.
Yeah.
And then media or pushing or marketing, whatever it is, let's see if we could take that energy and put it here, and that person really doesn't want to do it.
Well, because marketing, they realize that you're now a brand name.
Exactly.
You know, Peter Frank Miller is a brand name in the same way that Batman is a brand name. Yeah. You put Batman on something, it sells. You put Frank Miller on something, it sells. You put Frank Miller on Batman, it sells double.
Yeah. Would it That's sell the way now? They're would, thinking. It, would it sell now, though? Would you think if Frank Miller came out with a book right now that said Batman on it?
Yeah.
It and would here's sell why. Right now?
I think it would have to be reviewed really, really well because it got to the point where he did a book with Jim Lee and burned the audience on it.
So yes and no,
so
though.
So even with his partner... Oh, but
the store
you're saying-
we were working at the time was getting huge quantities of All-Star, Batman, and Robin. And that book was... People were... I got just as many people hating on that book as people loved that book, but everyone was buying it.
Really?
And it was... And I hated that book more than any other book, but it was when that book came out, it was the first book I read that week because I wanted to see how bad it got.
Didn't you tell me that The Trade is still selling really well?
Yeah, and well, it's,
really?
They've only
you're
got
constantly
the first,
reordering it.
Yeah, they only have the first trade in print. They can't print the second trade because it's an incomplete story.
There is no second trade. There was only one
exactly.
issue
left. They only did the one trade, and it's consistently sells because people come in. Hey, I read Dark Knight Strikes Again or whatever, or Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah,
I read Batman Year One. What else has this guy written? It's like, well, here's this Batman thing he wrote, and the non...
If you don't want to go to Daredevil and you don't
want
to go
to
Sin
City. Yeah,
they want
Batman.
Yeah.
That's your... And the guys who aren't super into comics, who are just kind of fly-by-night Batman guys who saw the movies or something, they love that book. They love it. They think it's awesome. It's Batman is a badass. He's running around hitting people.
He's got Vicky Vale running around in underwear for
what
four
else?
Pages.
Yeah, you don't... They're not
only
looking
four?
For...
He paints a room yellow and beats up Green Lantern.
Does he have a neck... Yeah. Does she have a neck collar in? Because I remember just reading that and counting the amount of neck collars Jim Lee put in there.
Oh, yeah.
And how many times...
I blame Matt Waite for that.
What, neck collars?
Well, if you read the Justice League, the new when the DC did the relaunch, everyone's got these like weird like collars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which sucks because the book me and Carmark down, I put that on our guy like 4 years
Take
ago.
Take it off.
Well, Matt.
Jim Lee loves straps.
He loves like weird straps and bandoliers and stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, you
now think about Gambit.
Kyle Rayner had that choker strap.
Yeah.
Look at Cyclops. He basically took the classic Cyclops
and gave him
cut his hair out, which is the best thing about
that
costume. And then just patches and straps everywhere. He's got the Y strap. He's got these patches around these straps around his thighs.
What do they hold?
Nothing.
They hold his thighs.
They just hold his thighs.
Somebody made a joke in one of the X-Men books. Like Wolverine reaches into a pouch and like pulls out a cell phone. And they're like, oh, I always wondered what you keep in the pouches. He's like, I'm not wearing pouches just to wear pouches, lady.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, so it's Matt's fault. Matt Waite.
Yeah.
He did some design work on the Green Lantern movie before DC did their relaunch.
Okay.
And they outsourced different parts of the costumes to different art teams. Mm-hmm. Matt designed the collar Green Lantern wears in the movie. It's Matt's fault. Because the year that because in Green Lantern the movie's got that like higher collar.
The collar
that's the collar they gave him in the costume, and then Superman had one. Wonder Woman's got a choker in the same.
She's got
shape.
A choker, dude.
It's weird.
She's got a choker. Everybody's
so I blame
got
Matt. That's Matt's fault.
I mean, but Jim Lee does go crazy with that. Like he just it's I'm gonna
he's,
be quiet. Because
yeah,
this,
in the 90s,
he's upsetting me.
In the 90s, everyone had a head sock.
Yeah,
and straps, and now everyone has V collars and like. Weird armor
piping.
Plate
piping. And that's something it's a
Which
art
is,
style if you read Ultimates Brian Hitch does the same thing where he did Ultimates everyone's got these like military where like they're stitching in every costume then he did Fantastic Four redesigned all their costumes with the same kind of idea with these like weird ribbing things and then he's got the Ultron Wars coming out later this year
all right
and he's redone everyone Moon Knight's in a new it's like Hitch style so much so that the Avengers movie used Hawkeye's costume from the Ultimates and he gets credited in the credits
what?
It's his Hawkeye's costume designed by Brian Hitch and it's like I don't know if he copyrighted it or what the hell he did.
Or if they hired him to, if they hired him to design a costume and he did his own costume.
Yeah, what's the Ultimates costume pretty much, you know? But it's, yeah, I think it's, it would, and that's something.
The Jim Lee New 52 costumes are really interesting because, you know, Dave and I read pretty much every Batman.
Yeah.
And his costume's drawn differently in every book.
Everyone.
It's like, okay, it's Batman with basically no black underpants and lines. And it's like Capullo has... Jim Lee has decided their armor plates. Capullo has decided their seams.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Hitch drew them as depressions. It was
hard. Like, they're hard to interpret. Like, there were lines that were given, and no one knows what they are. You know, and if Batman has his physique out or if he has armor, like, it's interpreted differently. And, you know, everyone's taking it, which is what they do for Batman anyway. Like, they just like, here, take this thing.
Well, I've noticed every time they redo Batman's costume, it's really different for about 3 months. And then it's slowly.
It always kind of makes its way back.
Because I remember in 92 when Kelly Jones was the big Batman.
That was like the big years, right?
Yeah. And they gave him the Tim Burton costume, where he had a yellow belt, he was all black, and then little by little, all of a sudden, he had black gloves and boots, and he had a gray costume again.
Yeah, everyone just kind of goes back.
Everybody just starts kind of edging it back.
Yeah,
and it's easier to draw. Yeah, I mean, call it Doug a Doug. Like, that black costume is a pain to draw. Like, where does it reflect? What is it made out of? What is the texture? Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to replicate that from the movie, the old Tim, what is it? Tim Burton movies.
Tim Burton, yeah.
So. They go forward, they go back and forth. There's a lot of interpretation that's going on. Where, at what point does someone say enough? Like, on all those
things. That's what I think happens, is you can always tell, like, who designed, like, you see the new designs for 52.
Yeah.
Clearly, Jim Lee designed all those costumes.
Like, sure
the very 90s throwback. But it's just like, Jim Lee doesn't have to draw those, because what you know, in a Flash comic or whatever, how many times you draw Flash? Maybe 30 or 40 times, probably more,
right,
for how many panels there are in the book. That's repetitive. It's time consuming. It's like, it takes forever to draw those little lines and stuff. People are just going to switch back to the classic at some point.
But it doesn't even make sense. Like, why would Superman wear armor? Like, it's Superman, dude. Like, he's got this weird armor.
Well, as
on
we
him.
Said before on other podcasts, a lot of the new 52 was to fix Superman, and that didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
I mean, they were setting up just in case Superman went bye bye.
I think, and I really think that the new 52 Superman costume is Man of Steel. It's so close to that Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
I think the movie is trying to be close
the book.
The comic. I think that's
You think so? Because, I mean, New 52 happened late 2011. They pushed that movie
back, though. That movie got pushed back because of the 52 and all the merchandising for all the new art you're seeing for DC's like promotional aspect. They're all in the new 52 costumes. Gotcha. Green Lantern's got all the piping. Superman doesn't have the red trunks. Like, they changed everything because they're trying to make this new company direction with this new visual, and that's
new logo to DC.
New
Comics,
logo.
I like the logo.
Everything.
I mean,
I don't like the logo.
I hate that logo.
I like the logo. Like, the logo logos. Just. I mean,
I don't see the D.
You know what that logo feels
D.
like?
I see a C with like a straight line on it. It works in animation when you're watching like Young Justice and you see the D
when
pull
it folds,
back.
Yeah,
but like, I'm looking at my shelves now and looking at some of the trades where they have the old DC logo and then the new one. I can't recognize
it's
that.
It's awful.
It's so
sleek, dude.
But it's not a quick read, and it's so not a quick read
that
you'll notice that they put DC Comics under the logo, which means the logo is not doing its job.
I feel like that logo was like Dan Dito's like nephew or cousin graduated from a graphic design school.
Gotta give him a job.
And he's just like,
this is a good logo. I think this logo will kill Nightwing.
Yeah. And now this just became the Dan Dito podcast.
Yeah, I don't.
We're always three steps away from being dead.
I don't see it. So. All these new costumes, you're right. Like, I mean, because Greg Capullo is doing it right now. He's super simplified that costume tremendously. Like,
to get his book out.
I also think Capullo has turned it back to the Batman Incorporated suit. Because they made
a different suit.
They made
a
big deal about that suit, and then like 8-9 issues in, New 52 comes and that suit's wiped away, and I'm like, wait, this was supposed to be
the new
suit
Bat
of the
suit,
decade.
Yeah.
And then Jim Lee comes out with a totally different one, and I'm noticing Capullo's, the way he draws the seams, are a lot like that incorporated. He just switched from the yellow oval to the black bat.
Yeah.
But they all have, like, the Nolan heavy gloves.
Yeah. There's some realism that's going into it, but it's, I mean, Greg Capullo right now is very animated with his Batman. Right.
And I think it's only something now because that book's been selling so well. I mean, in the first couple issues, he can't really get away with a lot.
And you wonder
now,
how much.
Him and Snyder are the creative force behind Batman. They can pretty much steer that ship wherever they want to go.
And they're A-list.
And from what I heard, Jim Lee was on every artist tight for the first couple of issues of every book.
They fired
Like, he was micromanaging
Liefeld.
Everyone.
because he was on too many books. He was shipping late, and they said, look, this was the rule with the new 52. You got to ship on time, unless you're Jim Lee. And right. Or yeah. They'll can you. And Liefeld was like tweeting, oh, Jim Lee's a bastard, backstab me, and going on about how we, you know, they were bros back in the Image days. And it's like,
have
well,
you
business.
Heard of the screenplay he wrote about Image?
Who?
Rob Liefeld has
oh
written
my
a
God.
Screenplay about the founding of Image.
No way.
It was on Comic Book Resources. It's supposed, they didn't print any excerpts, but yeah. They reviewed it. It's supposed to be insane.
Anyone listening can find that script and email it to steven.brown@chimerascomics.com.
Supposedly,
we will give you a shout out.
It's a tell-all book in screenplay format.
What? I bet it's awful.
It's gotta be. First of all, who would make it?
I would make it. I'd love to see that fucking movie just to see all these crazy guys. Like,
I mean, I've heard the stories. Like, there's thousands of podcasts out there where Jim Lee right. and the whole Image crew
That's
are getting together.
That's part of the
together.
Problem with this podcast. There's thousands of podcasts
yeah,
out there.
And they're,
yeah,
and
we're
and
getting
talking,
lost in the scene.
No, but, and they're talking about, like, and, you know, it's our personalities that stand out, guys. It's our personalities.
And no, that like, radio voice here.
And
that
super
sexy voice.
Yeah,
yeah
they're go. There. They're there talking about their crazy times in Image and how they got it up and running. But I want to see it through that Rob's perspective.
I want to see what he thinks. This is a guy who's doing like
on.
Gene commercials.
Yes.
He was like buying all these companies like
Gene commercials directed by Spike Lee.
Yeah.
I find it hilarious that he was in a Gene commercial and can't draw legs to save his life.
Yeah.
Like to
can't draw
save
anything
his
to
life.
Save his life.
Well, there were baggy jeans
that's
were
like,
in there.
I was going to say it was 90s.
That's like that man.
Jeans.
That's like that man having a shoe deal cuz I've never yeah. seen him draw yeah. a foot before in my
a
life.
A foot that looks
like
a foot.
A foot that
he should have been selling shoulder pads.
His foot Yeah, he should have been selling his shoulder pads altogether. But that man, like, I feel like he would have the most skewed version of how Image was created ever.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what? I will give you my week of store credit.
The one
if
guy.
If you send that.
Out of the.
To
I mean, because you had. Who are the Image guys? You got McFarlane, Jim Lee, Liefeld.
Silvestri.
And they wanted Romita to go with them.
Larson's part of it.
Yep.
Romita stayed at Marvel, which. Probably didn't make him a millionaire like it made all those other guys, but,
no, but
now
he's
the only one
career.
Still working.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
like, I'll take
he,
your work.
He works constantly, and he's consistently great.
Always good.
I honestly put him up, maybe not as groundbreaking, but he's the Kirby of our generation.
Wow. I think so, and he's, like you said, he's had every single character pretty much at this point. He's had either a monthly gig or a couple
special
issues. You know, he's drawn
craziness.
Everybody, and it's... He's quick. He's the only guy that can get maybe two books out a month if he needs to.
That's why he couldn't join Image, because he was quick. Like, every one of those Image cats were, like, delayed. Like,
yeah,
nothing
I was like,
else.
Yeah, you're going to make us look bad if you ship your shit on time.
You know what? Maybe if you stop all that cross-hatching, maybe, just maybe, we'll get a book out.
Maybe if you weren't your own editor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I'm reading.
No, that looks good. That
I just
good.
Got to the 90s in that Marvel... The story of the Marvel Age or whatever it is, that book that I can
that
never
book you can't remember that you keep,
yeah, you know that
you
book.
Keep recommending.
Go find that book. I got to the 90s and they're talking about all this, like these Image guys, and it's just like then they leave, they go to Image and they bring them back, and then like Frank Miller to bring it all the way back. Yep. Frank Miller's got a quote after Lee and Liefeld go back to do that Heroes Are Born crap. Miller comes out with this quote and he's like, what a bunch of hand jobs. You know, I can't believe these guys did this. I was all about the Image and artist rights, and this is everything Jack Kirby wanted, and then it's like, and then they go back to work for the man, and it's like,
and
Frank, you're just
Batman,
crazy.
Yeah, but that was also that it's legend. That legend imprint was supposed to be like the old guard's version answer to Image, because it was John Byrne, Mike Mignola, Frank Miller, Art Adams was a part
that
of
that.
That
was recent, right? Is this a recent?
No, it's 90s. That's like, and but the two things they did differently, which is probably why they're not remembered. They did a deal with Dark Horse, so they didn't start their own publishing company.
Yeah,
which was a big deal.
Wow.
And then they fell into the same traps. Just books were late, never coming out. Like their books were better. I think I would rather read Monkey Man and O'Brien than Wildcats.
Right.
But that was another book that never came out. Really, the two things that came out of that. Were Sin City, which I think we can all imagine is done, other than a second movie, and Hellboy, which is still going.
Yeah.
But that imprint is long gone.
Yeah,
those are just considered Dark Horse books.
That's the thing. A lot of these guys, you know, they were like, oh, well, the art's driving the books. People don't care about story. And then, they fire Liefeld off of Heroes Are Born, Captain America, and then he tries to get a American Patriot book, and it's just like he's just redrawing or using his pages with a different costume on Captain America. The guy's even like throwing a shield, and like Marvel sues him,
and I think that's where it started to turn back to writers in the late 90s.
Thank God.
Was with Heroes Return, because you replace Mark Waid
and Ron Garney with Liefeld, and it doesn't sell.
Tanks.
And then you replace, you bring Wade and Garney back, and it sells great.
Right.
And then you replace Liefeld on Avengers with George Perez and Kurt Busiek.
And it goes so huge.
That's when it started to lean more to writers. And then in the early 2000s, you started to see guys come from other media. You had novelists like Greg Rucka come in. You had Jeff Johns, who was Richard Donner's assistant working in movies. You had Straczynski, who was a television writer. Yeah. And that's when you started to see that.
Jeff Loeb.
That switch come back. Yeah, Jeff Loeb had written Teen Wolf and Commando before he ever broke into comics.
I mean, that's something that's kind of nice is you get these guys from these other medias. It's like, yeah, that's what you say. It's like, well, how do you break into comics? Well, go do something else awesome in a different medium, and that's how you break into comics.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a writer, an artist, you just, you know, suck less and draw good.
Yeah, basically already have a career.
Yeah,
and
then get in.
And take less money to go into comics.
Right.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. Okay, I'm going to pick something that I saw this morning. Epics, which is an internet channel that they make these great documentaries and then they put them on Netflix. So we watched William Shatner's The Captains on that.
Oh, the James Bond one was one of those, wasn't
James
it?
James Bond one was one of those. They're always really good.
Yeah.
They just did Graham Chapman's autobiography.
I don't know who that is.
Graham Chapman's one of the original members of Monty Python.
Oh, okay.
He passed away from cancer in 1989, which is kind of one of the reasons they ended in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And I read his autobiography in high school. I actually read it before he died. I read it in like 86, 87. And it was he was the first one of them to really talk about like what it was like to be in Monty Python. He was also he was an alcoholic, so he talked a lot about that. And he was also like one of the first comedians to come out of the closet at the time. So it was really interesting. And it was also written in a very Monty Python style. And what Epics has done, which is really fascinating, the movie's good, but I think the idea is incredible, was they found him doing the audiobook of it before he died in like 86.
Okay.
And so they took the audiobook, animated a movie. So it's all in CG of him telling the story. And then when he's talking about other people, like his parents or the other members of Monty Python, they hired the other members of Monty Python.
Wow.
So John Cleese is in it. Michael Palin is in it.
Terry
Jones is in it.
That's kind of dope.
They're playing themselves. And then the other thing that's really interesting is that they hired, it looked like 15 different animation houses. So depending on the story he's telling, this art style completely changes. So there's some which are 3D characters. There's some which is 2D.
Yeah.
There's some that looks like traditional animation with like CG 2D. And it completely just changes pace every 5 minutes.
Wow. What's it called?
That's crazy. It's called A Liar's Autobiography.
Liars. That sounds awesome.
And it's basically the last Monty Python film that can ever be done.
Yeah.
Dave?
Well, when I was a kid, my mom had to have the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles come over, and that was a little gang that I had back in Brooklyn. Me and my two best friends used to choose. We never had a Leonardo. It was always Donatello.
I was going to say, you only had three turtles.
Yeah, it was always Donatello, Raphael, which was me, and Michelangelo.
You were leaderless.
I was leaderless. Like, it did not work. And
that's why you're not together today.
The missing link.
That's why we're not together today. We don't even talk on Facebook. We're like, don't talk to me. But she used to have like every, and back then, remember in the 80s, everything was like, you know, branded. We had the Teenage Mutant Turtle juice box, the Teenage Mutant Turtle pizzas, the Teenage Mutant Turtle video game,
the lunchbox.
You know, everything was there. We went to sleep with the pajamas. Now, mind you, little private kids, you know, everything, bed sheets, everything.
Everything.
We had it in. She had it every weekend over our house, and that all came back. And I completely forgot about it for a while, and it all came back to me when I was sitting down and was seeing what Praj was watching on TV, and these new animated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the cartoon that's on Nick, is amazing.
I've heard it's awesome.
It's really great. Yeah. Ben watches it all the time.
Can't go wrong. Like, these are they're simplified but beautifully designed. You could tell who they are. It gets me back to my childhood. Dave from the shop bought all the toys out of nowhere just because he saw one.
Dave Redfield.
Dave Redfield showed up with a bag from like Target or something.
He
had every turtle, Shredder, Four Foot Soldiers, the Splinter, and the Van.
First one I sat down with, and I was like, Praj, what are you watching? And we sat on the couch, and I thought I was just going to do the whole like, approval of what you're watching kind of parent
kind of wander out after 10 minutes and do something in the kitchen.
Oh, this is great, honey. Yeah. That's awesome. And then I sat my butt down for 3 hours and watched every TMNT that was on in a row. And I gotta say, there was one where Michelangelo got the smoke egg, and he started.
That one's great.
Dude, I was like, this is brilliant. Like, this is like, we'll watch this over Timmy Turner and SpongeBob, but Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is back on TV. On TV. Let's not talk about the graphic novel.
They did a joke yesterday. They had a new episode. We just watched it this morning.
They go to
like April O'Neil's school, and they did a joke that made me laugh out loud that Michelangelo did, because they're fighting a robot.
Yeah.
And they like slice the robot's face off and the wires are all dangling. And Michelangelo's really excited to be in school. And Leonardo goes, quick, Michelangelo, the water fountain. And they cut to Michelangelo. He goes, I know, school has everything.
Wait, what are they doing in April O'Neil's in school?
April O'Neil's a teenager in this one.
Yeah,
so she's not a reporter. She's like a teenage girl.
I am jealous of Prajna and any kid at the moment that gets to experience this like as their first endeavor into the TMNT.
That's so
cool. Absurd. Absurd. That's mine.
You know, the amazing thing about it is I listened to Rob Paulson's podcast, which is all voiceover guys talking tunes. He was the original Michelangelo in the 80s, and he's probably best known for being Pinky and the Brain and Yakko on Animaniacs.
Yeah.
He's Donatello on this one.
Oh,
that's cool.
So he's played two different turtles on two different shows.
Sometimes you got, you know,
like 15 years apart, too.
Yeah. Steven?
You know, I was in a weird week. You know, just a weird week.
Just weird.
And Tuesday, I'm checking all the books in, and Matt shows up, and he brings gelato from Danico's. Cookies and cream gelato.
Oh, yeah.
It is... beyond description. Like, I've had cookies and cream milkshakes. You have cookies and cream and ice cream. You have cookies and cream. This gelato was, like, from heaven. It was ridiculous.
You're talking my language.
I will never purchase it because I don't want to soil the memory of how good it was. I ate the whole thing.
You don't
want to
go back right now, right after this?
No.
That's like those caramel lattes you brought from Araceli one day.
We'll never have that again.
Never.
No.
It's not on the menu, even.
I don't think they exist.
And Danico's is crazy. Danico's is a local pizza place in LaGrange.
Yeah, right on LaGrange Road.
And
Starbucks.
They will serve you half a pie for $5.
Yeah.
They call it one slice.
And it's not like thin slice. This is a thick slice.
Bready.
Like, yeah. And they give you a free drink with it.
Yeah, I only have it if you're going to eat one.
Yeah, because it's too much. I think it's too much food for one person. You usually have to split it.
Lies.
And for $5, who cares?
Lies. The way I eat that pizza is every Friday when I go work at the shop, I don't eat the whole day because I know that pizza is there.
The only one I've seen eat both slices is Stu, but that guy eats like a garbage disposal.
He's 7 feet tall.
He's outrageous.
Yeah, you know.
But I can't eat all day, and this is weird. I always check to see if I have $5 in my pocket.
Just to make
sure. Like, I'll go to the bank and make sure I have at least $5 in my pocket because I know that is going to
that's
be a trip eventually.
And that's one of the benefits of living in Chicago. You can follow me on Twitter at Not In My Book. Dave, you have Twitter now.
You can follow me home. I did do Twitter. There's about 5 people that are following me. I feel sorry for you.
If I had
a Twitter,
I'd follow you.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
So what is your Twitter handle?
So I think it's David Gonzalez or DH Gonzalez however that's worded, at DH Gonzalez.
Nobody remembers their Twitter handles.
Yeah, that's probably
why
I only have 3 followers.
Go follow John. John's following me.
I am following you.
And, you know, we'll just daisy chain this until you get to everyone.
Somebody should follow
me. You know, somebody should follow somebody. But yeah, that's how we go.
Steven, you might as well join Twitter because your Facebook status updates are
Twitter-like.
They're very tweet-like, and I don't think you want everybody following you on Facebook.
That's all I use Facebook for.
You say a lot of nice things about me on your Facebook.
I'm at 19 South LaGrange Road, LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!